Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. Hello and welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer Jesse Bell. Our first story is from CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative reporter Christina Laurie, covering Kingston City Council's decision to investigate the feasibility of expanding roundabout usage in the region.
Hello, I'm Christina Laurie, Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories in Kingston and the Islands. You can listen to CFRC's news programs Today in YGK and Kingston Currents on Mondays, Tuesdays, and Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or subscribe to our podcasts on Spotify and Apple Music. If you have any Kingston news tips you'd like to share, you can reach me at news@cfrc.ca.
Really, I just didn't want to keep going around and around in circles on this issue, so I'm just looking for more
information.
That's out of order. That's a dad joke. I have five kids.
That was Councillor Ryan Boehm speaking at Tuesday night's council meeting as he introduced a motion seeking more information about how the city decides when and where to build roundabouts. Last month, council approved the first major roundabout in Councillor Boehm's district in Kingston's East End to be built at a cost of $3 million. That decision came in place of installing traffic signals, which would have cost $1 million. Now, Councillor Boehm is asking for a deeper look into whether more roundabouts could be feasible around the city. His motion notes that roundabouts are becoming increasingly common in other municipalities as an alternative to traffic signals. They offer several potential benefits, including improved traffic flow, reduced emissions, slower vehicle speeds, and fewer severe collisions, contributing to both safety and sustainability goals. However, the motion also acknowledges challenges. Roundabouts require more space than traditional intersections, which can impact construction costs, property acquisition, and the surrounding area. With unanimous support from council, city staff have now been directed to prepare a report by early 2026, detailing the city's traffic control policies and outlining how roundabouts are evaluated for new and reconstructed intersections.
Short story long. Essentially, this is just looking for more information. Roundabouts definitely do have their place. We don't seem to be building a lot of them. So it was just in a conversation with staff of like to try to figure out like where that holdup may be. Is it a planning thing? Is it a money thing? Basically, it's more just trying to get more information. It does sound like going forward, we're probably going to start to see more of them in appropriate places. But this was more just to try to sort of understand from top, from beginning to end, how that whole evaluation process works. Obviously, we see them popping up in many places around us, but kind of want to understand how and when and why, and hopefully we will see more of them being built here. So that's as simple as it is. It's just looking for more information on that.
For CFRC News, this has been Christina Laurie, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Christina Laurie for that story. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for The Kingstonist, Michelle Dory Forestell, about a possible change to Greater Napanee's cross-border cell phone policy.
Thank you, Jesse. When a cell phone or computer contains sensitive government documents, it can be a significant concern, even at the municipal level, if that device is carried across the border into the United States, particularly in light of the broad authority given to U.S. border officers to inspect electronic devices. A U.S. cross-border policy report was released prior to the June 11th Greater Napanee Town Council meeting. The report recommends the implementation of a cross-border cell phone policy that would prohibit town-owned devices that store town data from crossing the U.S. border. The provincial government's Municipal Freedom of Information and Protection of Privacy Act mandates that municipalities protect personal and sensitive information under their custody and control. This responsibility extends to situations where electronic devices containing such information are taken across the border. The report notes that evolving procedures at U.S. borders have introduced considerations regarding the privacy and security of electronic devices carried by travelers. U.S. Customs and Border Protection officers have the legal authority to inspect electronic devices without a warrant. They can access and review the contents of phones, laptops, and other file storage to enforce laws and protect border security. Locking the device, putting it on airplane mode, and turning off facial recognition may not even be enough because U.S. Customs and Border Protection officials have software to copy the data from the device. As such, the Canadian government has updated its travel advice to remind Canadians of U.S. border officers' significant discretion when deciding who enters their country, including the power to inspect phones and laptops. The report notes that the updated advice emphasizes the need for travelers to expect device inspections and be prepared for additional questions. Using a temporary phone, encrypting data, and minimizing the amount of sensitive information stored on devices can help protect privacy during cross-border travel. Napanee Town Council staff recommends that the U.S. cross-border cell phone policy prohibit town-owned devices that store town data from crossing the U.S. border to safeguard sensitive municipal data, reduce legal and reputational risks, and ensure compliance with privacy and security standards. This policy applies to all employees and members of the Council of the Town of Greater Napanee who travel to the U.S. for any reason. In the report, IT staff propose that the town engage in a loan program by which council members or town employees traveling to the U.S. must trade their town phone for a temporary phone that will hold their SIM card. The report also recommends that council and employees reduce the amount of sensitive information stored on their devices before traveling. The report states that implementing this policy will require allocating resources to provide temporary phones and IT support, but the costs can be covered within the existing IT budget and equipment. Thank you to Michelle Dory Forestell for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LGAI reporter for the Brockville Recorder and Times, Keith Dempsey, with an update on the construction of a private school in the Gananoque area.
Thank you, Dinah. A private school in Gananoque has cleared a major hurdle as council approved a revised development permit, paving the way for expanded childcare and early education services at 250 Wilson Drive. The decision allows for the construction of a 1,723-square-foot accessory building on the property to accommodate a private school for up to 30 children, subject to several conditions, including compliance with Ontario Building Code and Ministry of Education requirements. The property had been previously approved in 2024 to operate as a day nursery under home occupation provisions, with before and after school care offered in a proposed accessory structure on the north side of the lot. The modified plan includes moving the new building to the south side to make room for a fenced play area and parking lot, while increasing the maximum number of children permitted from the original application. Council's approval was conditional on a final scaled site plan that reflected several design changes: an increased front yard setback, relocated garbage enclosure to the side or rear of the property, depressed curbing near the accessible parking space, and exterior vinyl siding that complements the existing dwelling. The owner must enter into a developmental permit agreement within 1 year of the decision for the approval to remain valid. All costs associated with meeting these conditions are to be covered by the owner. Council members voiced strong support for the project, emphasizing its role in supporting working families and enhancing educational options in Gananoque.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJAI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a report about the increase in emergency response calls in the region and the impact it has had on municipal budgeting.
Hi, I'm Ted Evans, local journalism initiative reporter and news director at CJAI, Amherst Island Radio, 101.3 FM in Stella, Ontario. Coming up are some of the top news stories from Loyalist Township. You can hear Amherst Island Radio's news program, North Shore News, on 101.3 Amherst Island Radio or online at cjai.ca. For showtimes throughout the week, check the schedule on our website at cjai.ca. According to their 2024 annual report presented this week, Loyalist Township Emergency Services responded to a total of 542 calls for service in 2024. This included a total of 65 fires, resulting in just over $2 million of loss. Fire Chief Kent Reedman noted an approximate percentage of accident calls that come from the 401.
When I look at the stats from from last year. It's about around 100 calls were car accidents or motor vehicle collisions, exactly 100 out of our calls. So that accounts for about 18.5% of our calls are car accidents. Out of that, I don't have the specifics on the 401, which I can get, and it's a, probably a good number to actually keep track of. But I would just a rough guess, we're going to look at probably at least 75%, give or take, of our calls, of our motor vehicle collisions would be on the 401. So a significant amount. So you're probably looking at last year, give or take 75 calls on the 401.
Councillor Paul Prodrick spoke about the time spent on the 401.
The chief and I talked last night, and I was really intrigued by how much time is spent on 401 calls. I think people need to realize how much of, you know, our time is spent on the major highway.
Reedman provided council with statistics and general information on a variety of operational and division-specific aspects of their team in 2024. They welcomed Reedman as their new fire chief last year, along with two deputy fire chiefs. Just under 6,500 hours of training were delivered to staff in 2024. They counted a total of 29 more service calls in 2024 than in 2023, representing a 5.35% increase. The Amherst View Station responded to the most calls in 2024, being the primary response area for 225 calls. Reedman spoke about the breakdown of their annual report.
It's based on just the average of the municipality. We could separate the more urban areas out. It does create some significant differences within that reporting structure. It definitely can be done. It was just done as an average over the entire township.
For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Ted Evans.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over now to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CJPE, Brenda Little, with a story about Fashion Week in Picton.
Hi, I'm Craig Foster, Local Journalism Initiative reporter and news director at CJPE 99.3 County FM in beautiful Prince Edward County. Coming are some of the top stories from PEC. You can hear County FM news 5 days a week, six times a day on 99.3 County FM, the voice of the county, or stream us at 99.3countyfm.ca.
That's the excited behind-the-scenes sounds of the models getting ready to strut their stuff down the main walkway of the Picton's Armory for the first fashion show of the day. The weather was perfect for the outdoor show, and the later indoor show was sold out. This is the very first Fashion Week for Picton, sponsored by the members of the Business Improvement Association and Modell Modeling and Talent Agency from Belleville. It is the largest production in 34 years for the agency, who supplied professional models of all ages and types, demonstrating fashions from many of the retailers on Main Street in Picton. The shows were the highlight of a week full of events and collaborations with wineries, the Regent Theatre, Department of Illumination, and all merchants on Main Street. I spoke with organizers and business owners about the event. Mark Rose is the Executive Director of the Business Improvement Association. I'm down in Picton for the first ever fashion show in Picton. Can you tell me something about that, Mark?
Yes, we are hosting two fashion shows today. The first one is 1:30 p.m. outside at the Armory, and the second one is inside the Armory in a perfect little natural runway space we have, or the Armory has. So 1:30 and 5:30 shows, you know, this is an idea that the BIA has had for a couple of years. We have enough great fashion retailers on the street where we thought we could pull something like this off. So this week culminates today with these two fashion shows, but it's been a great week on the street of activation, sales, lots of good energy, and that kind of thing.
Organizers Crystal Campbell and Kelly Somerville tell us more.
What can you tell me about the whole week?
Picton Fashion Week has been amazing. It's been really great to see our community come together, all the business on Main businesses on Main Street. It's just been great. It's been busy. It's a busy
Very
one.
Busy.
So we're just gearing up for the big event happening right now.
Yes, and Kelly, you have a business here. What are your thoughts?
I'm elated. I'm just so excited. I think to Crystal's point, the community coming together to showcase what really Picton is. We've got all these little local independent businesses, fashion all over the place, and we thought, you know what, let's start to showcase this.
Yeah, it's really great to have community support as well. Just the buzz on the street is really great. We're so fortunate to have Modell from Belleville producing the show for us. It's the largest show to date that they have produced. So and two separate shows, one outside the Armory at Armory Square, and then the sold-out evening show inside.
And do you think you'll try this again next year?
Absolutely. We're already 100% planning for next year.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. And what other events have been going on this week?
Oh, we've had some sip shop and strut sidewalk style. Sidewalk sale shopping.
Was late night on Friday night, which was last night, which was fantastic.
So wine tastings, yeah. Art gallery shows. There's been all kinds of things
happening.
Department
of Illumination has joined in the fun.
We did a really fun kids workshop. That must have been probably my favorite event that happened all week.
Kicked
off. They
got
to do a little runway walk. City Revival sponsored Clueless, the movie, at the Regent Theater. Everyone dressed up. So, yeah, it's been a really great week, and we're really looking forward to next year.
Yes.
Thank you.
But bigger and better.
Bigger and better.
If we could be.
Could we be?
We can be.
We can be.
We can be.
Thank you, ladies. I'm speaking with Alexandra from Magpie Fashions. Hi, Alexandra. How are you today?
We're very well, thank you. Very excited about Fashion Week.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, how it got started and why and what's happening?
It was the inspiration of a few members of the BIA board, Crystal from Crows and Nicole from Casey's Closet and Kelly Somerville from October Sky. Thought that now that there was a mass of clothing stores in downtown Picton, that we could perhaps showcase them a little bit, and they conceived this idea of Fashion Week. And this is the first one, so we're learning as we go, but there's been a lot of excitement around it, and we're looking forward to introducing people to the incredible array of clothing that we have here in Main Street Picton.
And tell me about the fashion show. I understand there's a fashion show tomorrow.
Yes, all the stores that have anything to do with fashion are involved in providing items from kids' clothes, from Meadows Babies and Kids, to Fat Face and Merchant for Men, and all of the ladies' clothing stores are providing outfits for models from the model agency in Belleville, and they'll be strutting their stuff twice tomorrow on Saturday, one at 1:30 in the outside of the Armory Mall, which is free to everybody, and then there's a second show in the evening inside at 5:30, which they're selling tickets for.
I believe it's been sold out, though.
I understand that it is sold out, which is exciting.
Yes.
So next year, maybe the Regent, who knows?
Yes, Picton, I don't think was like this before, so it's evolving.
Yeah, the energy on Main Street is really good at the moment. You know, I've been a merchant here for 25 years, and I have to say that it's really nice to see the street coming together and working together to do things outside the box, you know, outside your traditional, you know, sale event, to highlight all of the different things that Main Street has to offer. So it's very exciting.
It is. Thank you.
You're welcome.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, frequencynews.ca and CJPE County FM, I'm Brenda Little.
Thank you to Brenda Little for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with a story about changes to Port Hope's waterfront parking permit process.
Changes are coming to parking in Cobourg as residents are complaining about summer parking permits on the waterfront. The town offers a $40 season pass for the beach and harbor area. However, Jordy Nash claims the town wants $150 for a second vehicle pass. He addressed Cobourg Council's Community Protection and Economic Development Committee Tuesday, stating it's unfair to charge so much for a second parking pass. Nash said when he inquired about the second pass, staff told him parking is a privilege.
Why not offer a supplemental $40 pass? I'd be willing to pay $40. It may even exceed what we would spend buying hourly parking. It just bothered me so much that this pass was explained as a privilege, yet it doesn't really fit the needs of our family.
Nash explained that his wife, a cancer survivor, attends the waterfront on Monday and Wednesday evenings for fitness and drag and boat classes with other survivors. While taking one vehicle, on occasions he and their son attend in their second vehicle. Nash stated the additional exorbitant cost for the additional pass is prohibitive for residents. Mayor Lucas Cleveland said changes are coming to parking. He stated a report is due before the council soon. Yet Town Clerk Brent Larmer said families should be allowed to park two vehicles at the waterfront. He cited beach volleyball leagues where two vehicles are sometimes used.
We have a lot of volleyball leagues that happen down at the beach area too as well. And sometimes kids, you know, a parent is going there to do recreation activity and the other one is having their kids at a hockey or a baseball tournament, but they're coming back down to watch their parents, so they have two vehicles on there.
Larmer explained that the town is considering weekend visitor parking permits with online payment options. No timeline was given as to when the report would come before council. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
Thank you, Dinah. This is your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, June 12th, a daytime high of 22 degrees with a mix of sun and cloud dropping down to 11 overnight. Moving towards Father's Day weekend, Friday, June 13th, daytime high of 21 degrees, a mix of sun and cloud going back down to 11 overnight. Saturday, June 14th, a high of 19 with cloudy conditions. Sunday, June 15th, staying consistent in that 18 to 20 degree range with a 40% chance of precipitation. Monday, June 16th, going to be a beautiful day here in the city of Kingston, daytime high of 22, and it's going to be beautiful and sunny. Tuesday, June 15th, more sunny weather in the forecast, daytime high of 23 with a mix of sun and cloud. This is your City of Kingston traffic report for the week. Public Services and Procurement Canada wishes to advise the public that the LaSalle Causeway will be fully closed to vehicles, cyclists, and pedestrians to allow for the temporary opening of the main marine navigation channel during the following periods. For the summer, the dates of closure are June 8th, June 15th, June 22nd, June 29th, July 1st, 6th, 13th, 20th, 27th, August 3rd, 10th, 17th, 24th, and 31st, and September 7th. It will be closed 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. on each of those summer dates. The fall closure dates are September 21st, October 5th, 14th and 19th, and November 2nd and 16th, and the causeway will be closed from 6 a.m. to 8 p.m. on those dates. Now for this week's relevant road closures. Albert Street, Princess to Mac, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Aberdeen Street, William to Johnson, is closed to accommodate construction activity and staging. Aberdeen Street, William to Earl, is closed until June 11th for paving operations. Berry Street, Queen to Colborne, closed for construction-related activity at 283 Queen Street. Cassidy Street, Montreal to Maple, is closed until June 20th as part of the ongoing intersection improvements of Montreal and John Counter. Earl Street, Collingwood to Toronto, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Lakeshore Boulevard, front to Joreen, closed until June 13th to rehabilitate the existing sanitary system. Pine Street, Division to Cherry, closed June 9th from 7 a.m. to 4 p.m. for sewer relining. South Bartlett Street, Smith to Victoria, closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. Sydenham Street, Princess to Queen, closed until October 3rd for the Sydenham Street Community Space. Victoria Street, Union to Johnson, closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Victoria Street, Princess to North Bartlett, is closed until August 29th for construction-related activity at 655 Princess Street. And Wortman Avenue, Lakeshore to Lakeland Point, is closed until June 13th to rehabilitate the existing sanitary system.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering. Coming up now on this week's Release Radar, in partnership with the Kingston Music Office, we're pleased to present a new single by local act Restless Endangerment called Lilac. Restless Endangerment's lo-fi indie-pop sound is captured in Lilac, their debut home-recorded, self-produced track, which aims to capture the feelings that come with growing up, facing change, and falling in love for the first time after heartbreak. The band's debut single is out now on all platforms and was celebrated at a June 6th release party at Next Church with fellow local rockers Intero Bang and Two Time. Want to be highlighted next time? Complete the Release Radar submission form on the Kingston Music Office website or via Visit Kingston.music on Instagram. In the meantime, stream Lilac by Restless Endangerment on your favorite platforms and enjoy it here with us now on CFRC 101.9 FM.
Dress and the sun and talk your hair. Stay with me, gaze at the sky. Tell me what's on your mind. Cause when I am with you, I see a world that's all brand new. Take what you want and leave what you don't. Don't tell me you won't. I feel the weight of the world crushing down on my shoulders. For a second I blinked, now I'm 30 years older. Cause every time it's spring again, those lilacs are in the air. I see you in that purple dress and the sun rips off your hair. Stay with me, gaze at the sky. Tell me what's on your mind. Cause when I am with you, I see a world that's all brand new.
Sometimes it seems like you're just at your point where all you can do is look back and look on the past. It's too early to do anything to change your future. It's too late to do anything to change the past. So all you can really do is just wait. I think I'm there right now. To be honest, I'm scared. I don't quite know what to do about it. And I can't help but start losing my mind and wondering if it could have been different. Should have been different. I started to wonder if I should just accept what I have or try to make it better. Have faith I can. What do you think? Can you help me?
Cause every time it's spring again, those lilacs are in the air. I see you in that purple dress and the sun runs off your hair. Sit with me, gaze up the sky. Tell me what's on your mind. Cause when I am with you, I see you.
Since its inception in 2022, CFRC Power Plays has become the number one destination for all things Queens football.
And that is a touchdown for the Gales!
With over 50 million lifetime views, CFRC Power Plays is the defining voice in Queens football coverage.
Looking for Nico Cuomo! Cuomo! My goodness! Nico Cuomo with a touchdown!
Follow us today on Instagram at CFRC Power Plays, your number one spot for rock solid football action.
Hi, I'm Alan Cross. You may know me as the guy who does the ongoing history of new music. You're listening to CFRC 101.9.
Welcome. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. This is Absolutely Frivolous. My name is Cindy. I'm here every week to play some comedy for you. Let me tell you a little bit about CFRC and what it is all about. We are a community and campus radio station, one of the oldest in Canada. We're very lucky to be here at Queen's University to broadcast our wonderful shows. Our website is cfrc.ca. Tons of great information there about the different kinds of shows that we do put on the air. We have different genres of music, political discussion shows, different language shows, and of course the odd comedy show like this one. If you are interested in more information about volunteering here, please go to cfrc.ca. It is definitely worth volunteering here at the station. We are a lovely little family. They really do support the volunteers here. We have a lot of different types of people, old timers like myself, as well as young people who, young people, I sound old when I say that, as well as youngish people. Know music and other things in the world. And it's such a diverse schedule. It's really, really nice. It's nice to see all the different kinds of shows. And you can check that out, again, on the website, on the schedule. And you can listen to past shows as well on our archives page. So please go to cfrc.ca. I would like to encourage people also to look at the services page on our website. One of the things I want to mention are free PSAs, public service announcements. Queen's University student groups, departments, unions, and local nonprofit organizations who wish to spread the word about their resources and services on our airwaves here at CFRC can submit a 30-second script or a voice recording for mixing and addition to our broadcast rotation. There's no charge for that as far as I am aware, so please check that out. You can call our main business line if you have additional questions, 613-533-2121, and speak to any of our hardworking staff about doing a PSA. Today, I'm going to play for you some comedy by Daniel Sloss. He is very, very funny. He's a Scottish comedian who has become one of the biggest global names in stand-up. He's actually done live tours in 55 countries so far. He's created 13 solo shows, was the biggest ticket-selling comedian in the world for most of 2021. He's performed 8 New York seasons off-Broadway, and he's appeared on TV's Conan 10 times. I would like to say that I had to do a lot of bleeping for this particular piece, so be forewarned. If I missed anything or if you find the topic offensive in any way, I do apologize. That is not our intent here at CFRC. We try to make you think. We try to make you laugh. We try to make you happy with what we put on the air. So if I've done anything that may be offensive in terms of not bleeping something or chosen a topic that you are not fond of, we do apologize here at CFRC. So here he is, Daniel Sloss. He's going to talk about being 13 years old. And just a note, he really hates pulp in his orange juice. Here he is, Daniel Sloss, on CFRC 101.9 FM and Absolutely Frivolous.
It's another reason why I know I get called sociopath, because I'll happily laugh at people in miserable situations. But you've got to understand, I'm not laughing at them being miserable. The reason I make jokes with my friends when they're going through hard times is because I'm really sad about what happened to my friend. It was a horrible thing for him to go through, but I can't stop it from happening because it's happened. The only thing I can do is help him deal with it. And I've found in my life, laughing at things that have happened to you makes it easier to deal with. Just being able to laugh at something that's affected you means it has less power over you for a period of time. And that's why I like making jokes about these things. Now, at the end of the day, I don't really give a shit if you think I'm a sociopath, as long as you understand what you're accusing me of being. The difference between a psychopath and a sociopath is hotly debated amongst a lot of psychiatrists and psychologists, and they're going to be very annoyed by me butchering all of the f***ing science behind it. But basically, psychopaths are born. You're just born inherently shit. There's a chemical imbalance in the brain, and you're like, oh, I like to kick dogs. It's just that's who you are. Whereas sociopaths are made. Something happens to you during your childhood that stunts your growth, stops your brain developing empathy at the normal rate of other people. So if you're accusing me of being a sociopath, you're saying something bad happened to me during my childhood to make me that way. We should be able to work out what that moment is. And if it doesn't exist, logically, I cannot be a sociopath. So let's look at the known factors that turn someone into one. Let's go for it. Bad parenting. I'm going to cancel that one out straight away. If you've met my mum and dad, they're the kindest people alive. It makes no sense how I turned out. My mum is bewildered by the contempt I have for this planet. At least once a month, I'll phone her up and I'll rant about shit that doesn't matter. Then I'll just slam down the phone and she'll be like, well, at least he called. What else turns people into sociopaths? Childhood trauma is a big one. Something traumatic happens to you as a child. Now, there is one of those for me. When I was 8 years old, my sister Josie passed away. For any of those, if you've seen the special Dark, you understand that I'm more than capable of making several excellent, you know, points, talking about it very openly while also making excellent jokes about her at the same time. But Josie's death did not give me a disregard for human life. If anything, it taught me I needed to value it more. So we can nip that one in the bud. What else turns someone into a sociopath? Bullying. I was an excellent bully. I made sick dollar every day. No, I was bullied a little bit, no more than others. Not enough to be like, woo. What else? Child abuse, molestation, that's a big one. I've never been molested. Well, here's a story. When I was 19 years old, my mum gets a phone call from the police and they go, Mrs. Sloss, we'd like to speak to your eldest son. And that's me. So she put me on the phone. And they went, Daniel Sloss? And I went, the? And I went, what? Nothing. Okay, Mr. Sloss, we'd like to interview you. I've already got a job. Sorry. And just, I love trying to make police officers laugh because I'm white and I'm allowed to do that. And no. You're not angry at the joke. You're angry at the truth within the joke, right? I'm not woke for making the observation. You're not woke for getting upset. Let's all move on together. I was like, what's the interview about? They were like, we can't tell you over the phone. Do we have your permission to come around to your house and interview you then? And I said, no. They're like, why not? I'm like, because this could be a trap. A trap for what? What have you done? Nothing. Then it's not a trap, is it? Good point. You'll make detective one day. Next day, two police officers come to my house, a man and a woman. Their genders are unimportant, but it's going to help your visualization with the story. My parents are not allowed to be in the room with me while I'm being interviewed. It's just me and the police. And I'm like, am I in trouble? They're like, you're not in trouble. You were just either the witness or the victim of a crime several years ago. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. What crime? They're like, we can't tell you. Because we don't know whether you're a victim or just a witness, we cannot risk leading the witness and then losing your statement. So we just have to ask you a bunch of vague questions and hope you arrive at your own conclusions, and then you can tell us a story. And I was like, cool, fun game. Okay, Mr. Sloss, tell us about your acting career. Oh, easy, doesn't exist. But you have done acting before. No, not really. Yes, you have. Well, I mean, I'm not, I have. Yes, you have. I'm not the kid from Home Alone, man. Is that what, like... I get that all the time, but it's not, like... Mr. Sloss, you did musical theatre when you were a teenager. Oh, f***ing, oh, that, yeah. I don't consider that acting, though. I'm not from L.A. I'm not, like... No, I'm a lovely little actor. I sing a song every now and then. Like, I'm like, I did musical theatre between the ages of 11 and 17. Not because I enjoy it. I actively f***ing hate it. But my mum works from home, and during the summer holidays, I would be home from school. And she didn't enjoy that very much because I'm very annoying. So she did what any healthy parent does at that point in time and then made me someone else's problem. She just signed me up to Cannes and went, love you, bye. And that's... So I spent 2 weeks every year minimum at musical theatre camp. And they were like, and how was that for you? I was like, it was very traumatic. And they were like, aha, why? Because I can't sing. I'm not being modest, I can't sing. My voice doesn't really have much range and I'm also partially tone deaf. I can't really tell the difference in the pitch in my own voice. That's why whenever I do stand-up, I've only got two voices. It's either this monotony or the very offensive impression I do of women. It's It's either, hello, I'm Daniel Sloss, or hello, I'm a lady. That's all my voice does. So, you know, but I've always been confident and I've always had stage presence. So they ignored the fact that I couldn't sing and they gave me the leads in all the musicals. And then when it came to any solo songs I did, they made me rap them. Sound bad? It was worse. And it's stuff like Jesus Christ Superstar, where I played Jesus and I was like, yo, my name is Jesus Christ and I'm here to say, it was fucking horrendous. And they're like, who did you go to theater with? I'm like, thousands of children. They're like, name names. I'm like, oh, okay. Start listing off people I remember. I obviously don't arrive at the name they want me to arrive at. So they feed me it. They're like, do you remember this person? And I was like, no. They go, yes, you do. No, I don't. Yes, you do. Look, I know I've smoked a lot of marijuana since then, but my memory isn't actually that bad. You've smoked a lot of what?
Oh, what?
Huh? I'm sorry, I could. That's loud. My mum's outside the door. He also sniffs deodorant cans! He's a monster! Lock him up! Now, the reason I didn't remember the name of the person, well, it wasn't because I didn't remember the person, but it's because he had a nickname all the way through theatre, and they were using his full name. You never really realise the power of nicknames until your friend who has a nickname gets a new partner and their new partner starts calling them by their actual name. It will f*** you up for weeks at a time. They'll be sat there and they'll be like, have you seen Jason? I don't think I've ever met a Jason in my life. Your best friend, Jason. I think I'd know if my best... Oh, biscuit. Yes, of course. Sorry. And I go, oh, him, I remember him. Tell us about him. All right, he was nice. I remember my first day of theatre, I didn't know anyone, so I cried. That was my self-defence mechanism. He took me under his wing. He introduced me to people he knew. He was also a very good singer, because we had to do duets sometimes, and he'd sing really beautifully, and then I'd rap. Then they asked a question that changed the tone of the whole afternoon. How old did he tell you he was? I beg your pardon? Excuse-moi? F***ing what? What do you mean, how old did he tell? What kind of question is that? It was an 11 to 17-year-old theatre group, so he must have been 16 or 17. What do you mean? She doesn't answer. She goes into her briefcase. She brings out a stack of paper this thick. This stack of paper contains every single conversation I have ever had with this person over MSN Messenger over the course of 4 years. She starts quoting certain segments out to me and becomes very apparent very quickly that a 13-year-old Daniel Sloss was being groomed and had no f***ing idea. And when I say painfully obvious, I mean like, gah. Turns out I'm as bad with paedophiles as I am with women. Like, I just don't pick up any of the signals. I'm like, me, stop it. No, come on, no. She says, tell me about the yellow trousers. And I was like, oh, I remember the yellow trousers. I don't know if you've ever had a memory just come out of nowhere and fucking hit you. I was like, oh my God, the yellow trousers. She's like, why are you reacting like that? And I was like, because you've just put them in a very different context. In one of the musicals, I needed to wear full yellow. I can't remember why. It was just the character wore full yellow. And I had a yellow shirt and I had yellow shoes, but I didn't own yellow trousers because who f***ing owns those? Turns out this guy did, and he lent me a pair of yellow trousers for the duration of the musical. She goes, good. That brings us to June 3rd, 2004. He said, hey, Dan, do the yellow trousers fit? You said, yeah, thanks, man. He said, why don't you turn your webcam on and show me you trying them on? And I was like, what did I say? like, did I do it? like, I don't know. It's the next thing, it's just a video of me on your iPad being like, see, they fit. Like, what is this? She was like, you said, nah, man, don't worry about them. She says, you'll see them tomorrow. And I was like, oh, boy. Oh, boy. Open with that. She goes, can we proceed? And I'm like, absolutely, we can proceed if it helps the investigation. What's your next question? Mr. Sloss, do you remember what you said July 17th, 2004? Yes. Really? Nah! He said, hey, Dan, do you masturbate? You said, yeah, sometimes. He said, what do you masturbate to? You said, your mum, lol, and logged off. I cannot commend the professionalism of this woman enough. She didn't crack an inch. She said it with such a straight face that she must have practiced. She must have. Her and her partner must have just been in the car and be like, okay, ooh, here we go, go on. Okay, come on. Ooh, ooh. You said your mum. Oh, fuck. I was close. Come on, wait. You said you made me laugh. You did it that time. We'll leave him in there. It took me 5 seconds to realize what she said, and then I died on the floor, crying with laughter, just nudging the male officer, being like, I fucking got him, didn't I? He's like, get off my fucking leg. She's like, can we continue? And I was like, yes, please. This is the best day of my life. Mr. Schloss, do you remember what happened the weekend, August 20th, 2004? Nah, but I bet it was funny. Friday night, he said, hey, Dan, would you like to go to the cinema tomorrow? You said, yeah, sure, who with? He said, just you and me. You said, cool, see you then. He said, don't tell your parents it's just you and me. You said, why would I? You forget how stupid and naive you are when you're young. Like, I was 19 when I was being interviewed. I was 13 when these conversations took place. That's only a 6-year difference, but just, I remember being like, fucking hell, I can't remember being that stupid and trusting. And I can't remember going to the cinema. What does that mean? I'm asking her, I'm like, I don't remember going to the cinema with this man. Does that mean I have a repressed memory? Do I have repressed memories? And she was like, what? No, sorry. Monday morning, the first thing he said was, where were you? I'd forgotten to go. This poor pedophile. He's always so close. He's so close. And I just slip away every time. Every time. Like, I know he's evil, but he must be so frustrated. It must be so annoying for him. Just sitting in the cinema, melting ice cream. He's like Wile E. Coyote, and I'm like the Roadrunner, just me, and I just disappear. He's just there molesting the cloudy outline of where I was, like, ah, this isn't the same. Making these jokes, I'm laughing. She's listening to the jokes, she's not laughing. She's like, do you find this funny? And I was like, yes. Because you haven't told me what's going on. All you've done for the past hour is gone, hey, do you want to know how funny you were when you were 13 years old? Don't get me wrong, I have arrived at the conclusion I think you suggested I was going to arrive at. But if you want me to explain why in just this particular moment I'm laughing, because comedy equals tragedy plus time. And this was clearly very nearly a massive tragedy. And a lot of time has passed since then, right? And it's just, in all honesty, it just tickles me to find out that when I was 13 years old, that I accidentally teased a pedo. And when I said teased a pedo, she cracked. She went, I went, oh, yeah. Her partner was like, shh, in the car. Yes, write it down, of course, write it down. That's hysterical. I was like, what did you mean? What did you mean when you said how old did he tell me he was? What did that question mean? She goes, well, the time he was at theatre with you, he wasn't 17 years old. He was 21. He just looked incredibly young. He'd been taking advantage of this for a couple of years. We also know that he was a volunteer at a local school. And I was like, ow, like, that's not funny. Like, now I get why you weren't laughing at my excellent jokes earlier on. Like, if you'd opened with that, I would have taken it more seriously. Like, I know I'm okay, but is everyone else okay? She's like, everyone else is fine at the moment. The reason for the investigation is he basically left himself logged on one of the school computers. Somebody went on after him, found his browsing history where he was in a lot of forum boards pretending to be an underage boy. We then confiscated his laptop and we found conversations like that on that, and we're following the traces of all of those. Now, allow me, I know there's a lot of tension in this room, so allow me to spoil the ending by revealing he never managed to do anything to anyone. He is still in prison and he will be for a very long time. So just, you know, let's... unclench your buttocks, which was his catchphrase. Grow up, which was not his catchphrase. The interview goes on for about 3 hours altogether. I've got to convince them I'm not lying or hiding anything. At the end of it, they thank me for my patience and I thank them for the routine. And they're like, you can't ever talk about this on stage. And I was like, oh, yeah, okay. Are you telling me to keep a secret? Seems a bit hypocritical. Now, people have asked if there's anything traumatic about that story. And in all honesty, the answer is no, just because I was one of the fortunate ones. Nothing happened in that situation. It was a bit weird and jarring to find out, I'm not going to lie. Like, I spent, I think, a couple of weeks just replaying conversation I'd had with them over and over my head, being like, oh, that didn't mean what I thought it meant. But it was weird. The worst thing about it was just because I was 19 years old, I was legally considered an adult by British police. So they didn't have to tell my parents anything. They just f***ed off. And then my mum and dad came into the room and were like, what was that about? And I had to explain to my mum and dad everything I'd learned at that moment. And my mum sent me to that theatre group. Now, although we know that's not her fault by any stretch of the imagination, she's an emotional woman. She was devastated. She blamed herself. She was like, oh, my God, my baby, I can't believe I put you in so much danger. No wonder you're a drug addict. It's all my fault. Meanwhile, my dad was crying with laughter. Just, my dad's just been like, oh, he's a pedo. That's a belter. That's an absolute belter. Did she laugh at that? Yeah, she must have done. Of course she did. She'd have to be dead not to. But the question is, am I a sociopath? I don't think so. But then again, I wouldn't. Sociopaths tend to not know they're sociopaths. They also tend to hide in plain sight. I normally leave it up to the audience amongst yourselves. Talk after the show. Go grab a drink. See if you think I'm a sociopath. You've got two choices. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. Either yes, I am a sociopath, or no, I'm not. Either yes, I am a sociopath, or no, I'm something else entirely. Either yes, I am a sociopath, and the story I told you there wasn't entirely true. Maybe something did happen to me when I was younger. Maybe I hated the lack of power and I hated the lack of control I had in that moment, that subconsciously I became obsessed with power, I became obsessed with control. I turned down university because I couldn't stand the idea of somebody telling me how to live my life and making my decisions for me. So I got into a job where I was in charge, where I was in control, where I had a voice. And as time got on, I loved the attention, I loved the control, I loved the power it afforded me, and I got addicted to it, and I needed that attention more. I needed that audience to come back and give me that attention I so desperately craved. But the thing was, I needed them to relate to me emotionally. That would get them back. That would be the key to my success. But I don't have emotions. So maybe I learned how to fake them. Maybe I learned how to lie. Maybe I became a master manipulator. Maybe I made up a dead disabled sister who never existed just to gain sympathy. Maybe I spent 2 years of my life breaking up couples because I couldn't stand the idea of them experiencing a level of joy I myself am incapable of experiencing. Maybe I did that year in, year out, year in, year out, year in, year out, because I love the attention, I love the control, but most importantly, I loved the f***ing money. And despite what you say, money does equal power, so I worked and I saved and I worked and I saved and I worked and I saved. And in 20 years' time, when I finally snap and I do what needs to be done to cleanse this planet and purify it, and I go down in a hail of f***ing gunfire with a smile on my face, and they take my body straight to the morgue, straight to the autopsy. They rip off my shirt, they rip off my trousers. I'm riddled with bullets and a big rictus grin across my face and unblinking happy eyes. But the one thing that stands out above all else is the fresh tattoo across my chest, not of a manifesto, not of a list, of an address down by the docks in Edinburgh. They send down an entire team of SWAT and police there. They're all standing outside, surrounding the helicopters going above ahead. They lift up the doors. They throw in flashbangs. They throw in smokes. They look into every corner. And when the dust finally settles and the last of the smoke clears and there's nothing left, there's no movement, there's just... fridges. Fridges. Aisles of fridges. Stacks of... We've gone to the f***ing wrong warehouse. This is a fridge warehouse. They get the order. This is the address. They walk in, look in every room, every corner, basement, attic, nothing there. Then one by one, they open up the fridges and freezers, and it's just the heads of anyone that offered me orange juice with pulp in it. So it's either that, or I'm just a and I know what I've been called more. Austin, you've been absolutely incredible. Thank you so much. I've been Daniel Sloss. Good night.
Hi, I'm Danny Michelle, and you're listening to CFRC 101.9 in Kingston, Ontario.
Did you recognize that sound? That's the sound of a healthy, well-cared-for cat. I truly hope you've been lucky enough to hear that sound before. The feral cat population around Kingston and the surrounding areas has grown considerably over the last few years. And thanks to organizations like Kendra's Community Kitties, these feral cats are being fed, medically cared for, spayed, neutered, flea-treated, dewormed, given winter shelters, and placed in loving homes whenever possible.
Hundreds of these special animals have been rescued by Kendra, and many of these wonderful felines are purring right now, safe and healthy.
Wow. But rescuing and rehoming feral cats isn't easy. It requires an enormous amount of time and effort, and there are a few ways you can help.
You can donate to Kendra's Community Kitties on their website, kckitties.com. Even a small amount will help pay for medication, spay and neutering procedures, and food and supplies to keep these felines sheltered and healthy in the cold winters or extreme heat of the summer. Because some of these kitties are not socialized, Kendra has committed herself to provide 22 dishes of food with fresh water every day, 365 days a year, to six feral colonies. Food prices have increased significantly, so donations of food and money are always needed. Funding assists with the process of finding homes for these cats as well, as it takes time and money to find the right individual or family to be matched with the right kind of cat. You can become a foster family for our feline friends. Go to kckitties.com and learn how you can care for and love a cat or even a family of kittens until they can be moved into their forever homes. At the colonies, Kendra plants the seeds of trust and socializes the feral felines when she brings them food at the same time each and every single day. So they're more accepting of humans when placed with foster families. But fostering a feral cat is no easy task. Kendra cannot take these cats from the colonies unless there are foster homes willing to commit to help these kitties gain trust with humans.
You can adopt one of these special cats or kittens. If you've already been thinking of getting a furry friend, reach out to Kendra at kckitties.com and she'll provide you with all the information you need to make this important decision.
Any help you can offer Kendra's Community Kitties will be tremendously appreciated. Not only by Kendra, but by the lucky feral felines she rescues.
And hey, maybe, just maybe, one day you'll get to hear
Panda say I love you.
Did you know that CFRC 101.9 FM also has social media? Check us out on Twitter at CFRC for the latest program and news updates.
She may be weary. Women do get weary wearing the same shabby dress. And when she's weary, try a little tenderness. Just anticipating things she may never possess. And while she's without them, try a little tenderness. It's not just sentimental. She has her grief and her care. But a word so soft and gentle makes it easier to bear.